I'll tell you something funny about this collection. The first title was Too Jewish.
Oh my goodness, really?
Don't you think the stories are really too Jewish?
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. This morning, our guest discussing Jews in sports today is Jacob Jervis, author of The Jewish Sports Report on JTA and a contributing author for Major League Baseball. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the hosts and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. We are approaching the wonderful springtime blowout festival of Purim coming up in less than 2 weeks. In fact, my own congregation, Beit Simcha's super fun pre-Purim celebration is this Saturday night, March 8th at 6:30 with Unscrewed Theater doing improv, Homentoshen, more about them shortly, delicious drinks, food, even gambling, something we don't do so much of officially anyway as Jews. There's a reason all bets are off, on Purim. Purim is the biggest Jewish party of all, a celebration of reversals, both historical and in flavor and tenor, in which children costume themselves as heroes and heroines, rabbis dress up in silly costumes too, in which we are, as Jews, commanded, literally commanded, to drink Ad Dilo Yada, until we can't tell the difference between the evil villain of Purim, Haman, and the great hero of the Book of Esther, Mordechai. Purim is the fun spring holiday everybody needs, which children instinctively love and adults secretly need even more. It's a time of joy, silliness, and celebration, commemorating a great historical victory, maybe historical, embodied in the Book of Esther in the Bible. The shorthand version is this. 2,500 years ago or so, in Persia, at the height of the Persian Empire, a king, Ahasuerus, probably one of the Artaxerxes, replaced a principal queen named Vashti with a young Jewish girl, Esther, and made her his new top queen. Her uncle, or maybe cousin, Mordechai, also became the king's chief advisor. But Mordechai incurred the wrath of a political rival, Haman the Wicked, who outmaneuvered him initially and tried to have all the Jews in the whole Persian Empire, virtually all the Jews in the world then, fired from the U.S. federal government, murdered in order to get rid of Mordechai and steal the Jews' property. After many twists and turns in the story, all spelled out in the Megillat Esther, the scroll of Esther in the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, good triumphs. Haman is overthrown, and instead of Mordechai and Esther, all the Jews being killed, Haman and his allies instead are killed, and the Jews celebrate a series of wonderful feasts and parties. In particular, we chant and read this scroll of Esther from the Bible called Megillat Esther, which takes perhaps 45 minutes to an hour when chanted at a good pace. This is where the phrase, the whole Megillah, comes from. By the way, you know, we read the whole book. As we read or chant, we cheer for the names Esther and Mordechai. Boo! Every time we hear Haman's name, dress up in costume, eat, drink, and have a great time. All of this is commemorated on the holiday of Purim, a festival filled with delicious treats, especially Homentoshen. Best food known to man, except perhaps for the latke. These are triangular pastries filled with fruit or jam or chocolate or poppy seed paste and eaten to excess. Purim, coming up this year, March 13th and 14th, although again, our pre-Purim for adults, for grown-ups, coming up this Saturday night. Purim is that rarest of Jewish events, a time when we are supposed to enjoy drinking to excess, and even prohibitions on gambling are relaxed. Well, to play us in this morning in the spirit of Purim, here's a Sephardic song from the great group The Voice of the Turtle, and their all Purim CD, The Sword of the Dove. It's a Purim farce song, making fun of any host on Purim who serves insufficient quantities or quality of wine. It comes from the Jews of Tangier in North Africa. That was the song Kichlot Yeni from The Voice of the Turtle, all about serving wine on Purim, celebrating the delightful Festival of Lots. Join us at Purim for Grownups 4 this Saturday night, March 8th at 6:30 p.m. at Congregation Beit Simcha, featuring unscrewed theater improv, music, food, hamantash and drinks, gambling, and silliness. And don't miss our Megillah reading, Purim celebration and service for kids and adults. The whole Megillah, also with hamantashen and music and drinks, Thursday night, March 13th at 6:30 p.m. at Congregation Beit Simcha. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org for more information and to sign up. Our guest this morning is Jacob Gervis, who knows more about Jews in sports today than anybody else I can think of. He writes the Jewish Sports Report for JTA, is now also an author for Major League Baseball. Find out, or content creator might be the right term. Anyway, find out lots of things you didn't know about Jews in sports in America today. Even I, a sports addict, I know will learn a lot and be entertained in the process. Meet Jacob Gervis when he joins us in a moment as we return here on Too Jewish. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, Jacob Gervis, who is a content producer for Major League Baseball, which sounds wonderful, by the way, writes the Jewish Sports Report for the Jewish Telegraphic Agency, where he had a different position not too long ago. And I would say he's pretty much an expert on sports and Judaism, because I follow that really religiously, I guess that's the right term. And you come up with stuff that I
haven't heard of and only find out from you. So how do you find your stories?
That's a good question. You know, I'd say like any beat in journalism, it's a combination of readers reach out with ideas. I have sources that, you know, talk to me all the time. And then it's just genuine curiosity, asking questions, looking things up, following any sort of inkling of an idea. But in this case, the question is always, you know, is so-and-so Jewish? Which is something that my whole life, you know, my friends and my father especially have always texted me, you know, watching the game is...
Look, Sean Green is Jewish, or right, whatever, exactly.
So in this case, taking that question and kind of creating a job, a whole beat out of it, has been a great deal of fun.
You know, the old joke was the thinnest book in the world was Jewish Sports Heroes. You know, it was Hank Greenberg, Sandy Koufax, and a couple of boxers, and that's it. That's not true at all anymore, is it?
No, you know, I'm not sure it ever really was true, but I would say it's as false today as it maybe has ever been. If you just go across the professional sports, I mean, last year in Major League Baseball, I believe there were 18 Jews.
A perfect number, let's be honest. That's really...
Exactly. The NHL has like somewhere between 12 and 15, which is more than you'd think.
Crazy for hockey. I never would have thought that, but you're right. It's high.
And we're not even just talking about, you know, the last guys on the depth chart, especially in hockey today. You've got stars of the game winning league-wide awards, becoming all-stars, you know, Jack Hughes, Zach Hyman. It's crazy. The talent is really, really rich.
You had a piece recently that ran in JTA about Domantas Sabonis, who's a terrific player. He should have been in the All-Star game, leading the NBA in rebounding. He's a great scorer. And that he's converting to Judaism. That was shocking that you got this. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I mean, I can't take credit for breaking that story, but I'm happy to share with what the story is, which is...
Please.
You know, Domantas Sabonis is on the Sacramento Kings. Like you said, one of the best players in the game. He basically has a triple-double every night. You can count on one hand the number of games he's played where he doesn't get a triple-double. And Sabonis' wife, Shoshana, was raised in Los Angeles in a Jewish family, attending Jewish day school. They had a Jewish wedding, I believe, in 2021.
Huh.
And the story, as far as I understand it, is as long as they've been together, he's been living Jewishly, you know, keeping kosher, keeping Passover, Shabbat. He studies with Rabbi Erez Sherman from Sinai Temple in L.A.,
huh.
And he, you know, intends to formalize how he's already been living. I understand that it hasn't been finished yet, and I think that's just a kind of a product of the crazy life of a professional athlete. He just, you know, he's traveling every night, and there's not a lot of time for that sort of stuff, but it's very important to him. And for all intents and purposes, he's been living Jewishly for at least 4 or 5 years at this point. And, you know, I should say in Sacramento, he's been involved with the local Chabad there. He has a relationship with the rabbi there as well. So I think he considers himself a Jew. I will say covering this world, it was very fun. Sometimes we discover a player who is up and coming, who, you know, grew up Jewish and we don't know about them because they're 17. It's very rare that you have a player who's already established, already a star, who just poof becomes Jewish. And that was a very fun story. You know, you don't get that every day.
And the son of an NBA player, might add, an NBA star.
Exactly, yeah.
We will talk much more with Jacob Gervais about Jews in sports, not just what will probably be one of the tallest Jews in the world after he finishes his conversion to Domantas Sabonis. I think Danny Avici, I never know how to pronounce his name, for Portland is like 6'9 or 6'10. But anyway, we will talk more with Jacob Gervais about Jews in sports when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills and northwest Tucson, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this winter and spring. Established 6 years ago by terrific congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us for Shabbat services Friday night, 6:30 p.m., always followed by a delicious Oneg Shabbat. Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, always followed by a delicious Kiddush, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Or come to our services on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests always. Call 520
206-576-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Religious School is going great guns for school-age children and grandchildren. Join us for Hebrew School, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tykes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Join us for Purim for Grown-Ups 4, coming up fast, Saturday night, March 8th, this Saturday night. Fun improv theater from Unscrewed Theater, music, drinks, food, gambling, hamantash, and big fun. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are always open to everyone. Join us in person Friday night or Saturday morning, or join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m., always followed in person by an Oneg Shabbat. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. Services are at 10 a.m. Services are on Facebook. And all of our Adult Education Academy classes, including Torah study, are available on Zoom. You can access those through our website or by emailing rabbi at beitsimchatucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. For more about Congregation Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school, and Torah Tykes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, conversion, weddings, funerals, you name it. Rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook. And Purim for Grownups 4 this coming Saturday night with the Improv Theater. Well, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Please join me, Rabbi Sam Cohen, at Beit Simcha, the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of Southern Arizona. If you've got a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or akvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, TOOJewishRadio.com, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes stores, very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review 2Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments all help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. And now it's time for a recurring, inscrutably irregular feature of 2Jewish. Wisdom from Zen Judaism. Accept misfortune as a blessing. Do not wish for perfect health or a life of ease. What would you talk about without problems? And Zen is not easy. It takes effort to achieve nothingness. And then what do you have? Bupkis. That was the eternal wisdom of Zen Judaism. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, on this show, we tend to do something that Jews do all the time. We talk about the Jews of Italy or the Jews of France or the Jews of Germany or the Jews of Spain. But the truth is, all of those entities have been very different over the course of centuries. There's really no fixed place like that. And some of those countries weren't even countries. So our perception of borders and even nations is probably wrong, at very least inflexibly.
Absolutely. I think most people tend to conceptualize the map as drawn in ink when in fact, it's drawn in pencil. And what we think of as France, for example, a country I know very well, when we think of France, we're thinking of France in the Fifth Republic, as it is today, and the maps as they are today.
2025.
After two world wars and lots of other things. If you look at a map of France over the past, say, 1,500 years, it changes radically. It gets, at some points, much bigger. At one point, it encompassed almost all of Europe. And at other points, it's like a little tiny area around Paris.
Yeah, like Île-de-Paris, Île-de-France. It's just, you know, the Cape, it's little tiny personal holdings
right.
or something,
and,
right?
You know, a third of what is today France used to be England. And a third of what is today France used to be the Holy Roman Empire. And so the maps exist in our minds, but they represent only one point in time. They're not eternally valid. So when we talk about the Jews of a certain place, we really have to talk about the Jews of a certain place at a certain time, because the same community might, I mean, for example, the town where my father's parents grew up, they thought of themselves as Hungarian. It was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. All the residents spoke Hungarian, and it was called Ungvar in Hungarian, which means fort on the river Ung. Okay. Then World War I comes along, and it is ceded from the Austrian-Hungarian Empire.
Which ceased to exist.
It becomes independent for a while. It's an independent Hungary. Then Hungary loses a war. And so that becomes part of Czechoslovakia, which then ceased to exist and became Slovakia. But that part of Slovakia was ceded to the Soviet Union, and that city, Ungvar, is now part of Ukraine. So in the course of much less than 100 years, the same city belonged to like four different countries, five. Let's see, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Slovakia, the Soviet Union, and now Ukraine.
Six different countries.
In the course of a century.
One town.
And that was an important Jewish community. So when you talk about the Jews of Ungvar,
I mean, my grandparents on my mom's side came from an area they called Russia-Poland.
Right.
Because it had been Poland, and then it was Russia. Later, Germany conquered it, but then it went back to being part of Russia-Poland. Then it was part of the Soviet Union. Then it was Poland, and now it's part of Poland. What is Russia-Poland? It's not a place. It just means somewhere in that area that they dispute.
It's a blurry, vague concept that changes over time. So, I mean, another, I think, really good example is the idea of Yugoslav Jewry. So the country of Yugoslavia existed for a brief, glorious moment in time, mostly in the second half of the 20th century.
Right.
Before that, part of it was the Ottoman Empire, part of it was the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And before that, it was lots of other things. But when you talk about the Jews of Yugoslavia, you're talking about a particular moment in time, because my friend whose grandfather was the chief rabbi of the former Yugoslavia was chief rabbi in what are now five or six different countries.
It's really quite interesting. The way that we think about borders is, you know, this is our border. This has always been our border. And that's almost never true. And it's something to remember. It's relevant right now, today, in many places in the world.
It's rare to have a border as stable as the U.S.-Canadian border, which apparently now is in jeopardy.
Yeah, apparently so. Who knows? Tom, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Moshe, young Talmud student, leaves Borough Park. He spends years and years in Arizona and finally returns to visit his family. But his aging mother notices he's changed. "But Moshe, where's your big beard?" asks his mother, seeing him. "Ma," he replies, "in Arizona, nobody wears that kind of beard." "But at least you keep the Shabbos?" his mother asks. "Ma, business is business. In Arizona, everybody works on Shabbos." "But kosher food you still eat?" his mother asks. "Ma, in Arizona, it's very difficult to keep kosher." There is a long silence while Moshe's elderly mother thinks about what he has told her. Then she leans over and whispers in his ear, "Moshe, tell me, are you still circumcised?" That was the Old Jewish Joke of the Week, special feature of Two Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Tetzaveh in the book of Exodus, a ritually oriented portion that gives the commandment to create a Ner Tamid, an eternal light for the tabernacle in the wilderness. Tabernacle was the first sanctuary of the people of Israel, although technically speaking, the tabernacle, the Mishkan, was just a very elaborate portable tent. It was also the place where God's presence in the form of the Shekhinah, the divine female indwelling presence, resided. Last week in Truma, our ancestors were asked to create this sacred space through the voluntary gifts of their hearts. And this week we're told that there should be a continual fire, a Ner Tamid, a constant light shining on the altar, a sign of God's faithful and permanent presence in our midst. Revealingly, that light is to be created and kindled by us, not by God. We must build the altar and the fire and continue to feed and nurture it to keep it alive. Well, if you've ever kept a fire burning around the clock, say at a camp out or a bonfire, or for heat on a cold winter's night in some frigid clime, you know just how much fuel you need to do it. You're always either stoking it or bringing in more wood for it to burn. If neglected for any length of time, it burns out. The Ner Tamid, thus, was not just a symbol, but a process, requiring regular care and feeding to flourish. Our own spiritual lives are rather like that ancient Ner Tamid. If we wish God's presence to illumine our lives, to give us warmth and comfort, then we, too, must feed our own Ner Tamid, must gently and regularly add spiritual fuel to the flame. Religious experiences, prayer, meditation, introspection, saying blessings, personal and communal rituals, time for breathing and allowing God into our lives, all of these help feed the fire. And they must be done with regularity, or our own internal, eternal lights may, in fact will, go out. The Ner Tamid, that ancient light, is found today in every synagogue in the world, no matter how humble the shul or how grand the temple. While today we just pay electric bills to keep it alive, even that requires a bit of active participation. But its symbolic purpose, well, that's much greater. The Ner Tamid burns always to remind us God is with us always, if we only take the time to feed our own spiritual fires regularly. May we continue to do so this week and every week. When we return in a moment, our guest, Jacob Gervis, fills us in on who is Jewish and becoming Jewish in our major professional sports and how that's changed over even recent years. It's fun and informative and just might change the way you watch sports or who your sports heroes are even. Find out all about it when we return with Jacob Gervis in a moment right here on Two Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
The last of the exchanges under the first ceasefire agreement between Israel and the Palestinian terrorists of Hamas was completed last week when the Hamas-Palestinian terrorists returned the bodies of four Israelis they murdered after kidnapping them. Israel released over 600 Palestinian terrorists held in Israeli prisons for their acts of violence. Remains to be seen how the next negotiation will go on a ceasefire. We wonder exactly what the terms will be for the release of the remaining 59 Israeli hostages still held by the Palestinian terrorists of Hamas in Gaza. About half are believed to still be alive. Some of the remaining imprisoned Israelis, who have been held for well over 500 days now by these Palestinian terrorists, were forced by Hamas to watch the public humiliation of the captives, their fellow captives, and the bodies of the murdered during the release of the living and dead hostages last week. After continually witnessing Hamas turn the release of the kidnapped men, women, and children into a public spectacle, and the horrific way in which Hamas Palestinian terrorists displayed the coffins of the dead to cheers and jeers from large crowds of Palestinian Gazans, Israel at first balked at releasing any further Palestinian terrorists. Hamas sort of backed down and sent back the final four Israeli bodies without further brutalities. Last week, of course, there was a further atrocity attending the release of the body of Shiri Bibas, mother of the youngest of the two hostages murdered by Hamas Palestinian terrorists, Ariel and Kafir Bibas, ages 4 years old and 9 months old, whose bodies were sent back to Israel. The body that Hamas sent back of who was supposed to be Shiri Bibas, done with horrifying spectacle, you may recall, giant photos of the three of the family, the dead infant, toddler, and mother on the caskets, great celebration of the fact that Palestinian terrorists murdered the family, doctored pictures of Netanyahu as a vampire, huge cheers from the assembled Palestinian mobs. That body turned out not to be Shiri Bibas. In fact, nobody knows whose body it was. Hamas eventually returned Shiri Bibas' body a few days later. Negotiating with Hamas or Islamic Jihad is not like negotiating with civilized human beings, of course. That must be clear to everybody on our planet. We will see what happens next. Last week as well, landmarks around the world were illuminated in orange for one night to honor Shiri, Ariel, and Kafir Bibas, the Israeli mother and very young sons murdered in captivity in Gaza by Palestinian Hamas terrorists. The three were buried last Wednesday, several days after their bodies were returned to Israel. Their husband and father, Yarden Bibas, who was taken captive separately, was freed this month. Their plight has been a symbol of national Israeli trauma since October 7, 2023, when Hamas Palestinian terrorists brutally attacked Israel, murdering 1,200 human beings and taking 250 hostages, among them the elderly and the very youngest hostages, the Bibas infant and toddler. Among the landmarks illuminated in orange, the color that came to symbolize the family because of Ariel and Kafir's bright red hair, were the Empire State Building in New York City, the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin, the Chain Bridge in Budapest, and the Eiffel Tower in Paris. These displays were reminiscent of what happened in the immediate aftermath of the October 7, 2023 attack, when world landmarks were illuminated in blue and white to show solidarity with Israel after the atrocities perpetrated by the Hamas-Palestinian terrorists. In Argentina, where Shiri Bibas' father grew up, tributes to the family have included a mass demonstration, 2 days of official national mourning, and a vote by lawmakers to rename Buenos Aires' Palestine Street as Bibas Family Street. Shiri Bibas' parents, Margit and Yossi Silberman, were murdered by the Palestinian terrorists October 7, 2023. In our two Jewish news of the weird and troubling, President Donald Trump presented in his social media an AI-imagined video of a Trump Gaza resort hotel. It depicted a supposed future version of Gaza with bearded belly dancers on the beach, a giant gold statue of Trump, money raining from the sky, Elon Musk eating pita, and a Trump Gaza hotel. The video, which was posted on Trump's Truth Social and Instagram accounts, draws on images generated by artificial intelligence, created after Trump said in early February the U.S. would take over the Gaza Strip. Apparently, the video was originally created as a joke. But, of course, since it presented Trump as a giant golden statue, with souvenir shops selling small gold statues of Trump, naturally he liked it and shared it with his followers. I hope he gets that it's a joke. One never really knows, do they? And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Jacob Gervis, who is a content producer for Major League Baseball, writes the Jewish Sports Report for Jewish Telegraphic Agency. So I'll tell you a quick story. When I started in my in Tucson some years back, I went running with a group of friends, and they didn't know me very well yet. I had just moved here, and one of them came back and told his wife, "Boy, that Rabbi Kohan knows so much about sports." And I thought, I'm not sure that that's what I want to put on my, you know, CV, but the number of prominent Jews in Major League Baseball, it's been pretty high for a long time. And from Tucson, we had Ian Kinsler for a long time. Who are the guys in Major League Baseball now that are Jewish that we wouldn't think were Jewish?
You wouldn't think we're Jewish. Okay, well, that's a different question. You know, and I will say one thing that has changed in recent years, I'd say the last decade, but especially the last 5 or so years, is with, you know, the introduction and kind of the blossoming of the World Baseball Classic, it's almost harder for someone who wants to be Jewish to hide that. And I think that's a really cool thing.
Because they go play for Israel, right?
Yeah, I mean, not every Jew in MLB has done that, but the opportunity to be way more vocal about your Judaism is it's easier now than it's ever been. Not to mention things like, you know, social media, and we can get into, you know, the impact that like October 7th had on some of those athletes and
sure,
how public they were about their identity. But the top Jews in baseball are kind of known at this point. You got Alex Bregman, Max Fried, Jock Peterson, all of whom, by the way, just signed with new teams for this season.
With giant contracts, at least two of them.
Enormous. I mean, Max Fried just signed the largest contract, both ever for a Jew, but also for a left-handed pitcher in baseball history. It was $218 million.
Amazing.
Ian Kramer on the Orioles has Israeli parents. I mean, there are players with very interesting stories. I don't know that any are, you'd be so surprised that they're Jewish at this point. I mean, Harrison Bader, who just signed with the Twins, spent some time with both New York teams over the past few years. He's one who wasn't super vocal about his Jewish identity, even while playing in New York. And October 7th changed that. After that, you know, he got one of the necklaces, that the dog tag necklaces that he wore sometimes, and he had a Jewish star on his belt that he wore for the rest of the season. You know, players like him who haven't played for Israel yet, although he wanted to, aren't super vocal about it, still find ways to kind of infuse that part of their heritage, their part of their identity onto the field, and I'd say more so now than ever in the past.
You know, certain sports, like basketball, was a Jewish sport for a while, which of course seems, you know, kind of amazing. And I think people don't know that history. Now there's a bunch of owners that are Jewish across all sports, right? You know, Bud Selig, the past commissioner of baseball, is Jewish. It's interesting. It used to be like what's the old joke? When a kid is bar mitzvah, maturity shows when he realizes he has a better chance of owning a sports team than playing on one. Let's talk about Jewish owners from the Philadelphia Eagles, who just won the Super Bowl not long ago. What percentage or what proportion do you think are Jewish among the four major American sports?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know the exact number, but there are a lot. And, you know, every time this comes up in the news or, you know, a Jewish billionaire buys a team, honestly, I find myself being pretty careful in how you cover this, because
yeah, of course,
this is one of the things that it's just a matter of the fact, you know, Matt Ishbia is a billionaire. He bought a team recently. David Rubenstein just bought the Baltimore Orioles. Like, right. It's happening. It's news. These are real Jewish people with money. But it obviously plays into stereotypes.
Yeah, like the Steve Cohen tax in baseball.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, he's a prime example of endless money. So, you know, these are things that sports fans care about. You like to know who your favorite team's owner is often so that you can deride them on the internet, fair or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of them are Jewish, especially, I would say, in the NFL and in I think in the NBA. Cuban. Well, Mark Cuban sold his team, but he sold it to Mary Madeline.
Mary Madeline, yeah. And then they traded Luka Doncic. So, you know.
Poor Mavs fans. Yeah, and then you've got, you know, obviously people like Robert Kraft who make their Judaism a centerpiece of their sports ownership and leads that into, you know, the work he's doing at the Foundation to Combat Anti-Semitism. So it's very front and center for some people, others less so, but yes, it's a huge part of covering Jewish sports is the kind of endless drumbeat of rich Jews buying teams.
The most famous Jewish sports incidents in American history are Sandy Koufax sitting out the day of Yom Kippur and not pitching in the World Series, which mirrored something that Hank Greenberg had done in the 1930s. I remember Sean Green sitting out on, I think it was Yom Kippur also, when he was playing for the Dodgers. And every year there's that story comes back, right? If there's anybody Jewish, and it used to be that Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur always came during the playoffs and before there were playoffs during the World Series. Nowadays, the playoffs go so long that they're more likely to hit Halloween than Yom Kippur. But why is that still such a fascinating story for people, do you think?
Good question. You know, of all of the things that I've covered in my time in this space, this is, I think, the most interesting because exactly what you said, you know, we're coming up on, this is 60 years since that World Series. And
right.
It still holds such a...
1965, that's right. And Minnesota.
October will be 60 years since Sandy Koufax, you know, the most important thing he ever did was when he just chose not to play.
Yeah, it's fascinating because he was obvious. I mean, he's arguably the greatest left-handed pitcher in baseball history, you know, an icon, had the most dominant stretch anybody perhaps has ever had. Lots of other things. He was a classy guy. They won World Series, but it was when he didn't pitch that it mattered.
Right. And, you know, it's worth mentioning, he was never particularly religious. You know,
Never. He
grew up Jewish. He was always proud of it, but he was a secular Jew for all intents and purposes. He did not have a bar mitzvah growing up. He did this just because, as he always said, it felt like the only option. It felt like the right thing to do. And I would wager that he had no idea 60 years ago the impact of that decision and how it still lives in the hearts and minds of Jews today. You know, not even just in sports, but across industries of people saying, you know, Sandy Koufax didn't pitch in the World Series on Yom Kippur. How could I do XYZ on Yom Kippur or on Passover or on Shabbat or, you know, what have you. And I talk to athletes all the time who have had their own kind of Koufax dilemma. You know, everyone makes their own decision what's right for their lives, for their careers, especially in baseball.
Right.
You know, it's a matter of fighting for a roster spot sometimes, and if your livelihood is on the line or a pennant's on the line, and if you make the playoffs, you get more money for your family. Like, you know, it's not always so black and white, but that's that. In some ways, small thing that he did 60 years ago, not that it was small, but in the scheme of his life, he probably didn't think that would be his defining act. And now, you know, I was at Dodger Stadium a few summers ago when they unveiled his statue, and that was almost a centerpiece of memorializing or honoring his legacy, was that one decision that was mentioned in the litany of all of his other accomplishments and legacies. And it's just remarkable. And I don't think that will ever end, and I don't think it ever should.
What's your favorite sport?
For me, it's baseball.
You're obviously right. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. Jews like sports. They're fascinated by sports. It's Americans are fascinated by sports. But I think the Jewish connection to baseball is perhaps stronger even than it is to football, which is the big American most popular sport these days. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, that is my favorite question. Every time I interview anybody Jewish who is involved in the game of baseball, whether they're a player, a coach, a reporter.
Andrew Friedman, for example.
So anytime I get someone like him on the phone, that is the last question of every interview, is what is it about baseball? And my answer, which I've heard in some ways from some of the people I've talked to, is the way that tradition and history are ingrained in both baseball and Judaism are kind of inextricable. The way it's passed down from generation to generation, the family bonds, the way that you almost kind of remember your family history and your experiences through other events, you know, in the context of Judaism and baseball. You remember who you were with at that game. You remember, you know, I'll never forget the 2011 season when the Red Sox had their infamous collapse and the final game of that collapse happened on Yom Kippur. You always, these things are forever linked in our psyches as Jewish sports fans. And I think there's just such a rich culture of tradition and history. And, you know, there's something, if you've been to a baseball stadium for a playoff game or an important game, or even just a regular Tuesday night with someone who's important to you, like when you walk into that stadium, it has a special feeling to it that I have always found to be spiritual, almost religious. And I have not felt that to that extent in other stadiums and other sports.
It's fascinating because I also think that there's a connection that Jews feel to the statistics of baseball. I don't know why. I agree with the notion of tradition and the beauty of green grass and the stories and the way it's, there's kind of a midrash to baseball, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But there's something about the statistics that, I don't know if it's Talmudic, but... It's like,
I think you're right. You know, to kind of borrow another famous Jewish joke, like ask any baseball writer who, you know, ask three baseball writers who's the best player in baseball, you'll get four answers.
Right.
There's so many different ways to look at it, and there's no right answer, there's no wrong answer. The stats keep changing. We keep introducing new stats. I mean, now there's, you want to talk about pitching prowess, now you can talk about stuff plus.
Right.
Which, if you had told people 20 years ago, they would have thought you were kidding.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like gibberish. But it's a real thing.
Well, then you get WOBA plus for hitters. And I mean, stuff that's just like, okay.
Right. These acronyms just sound insane when you talk about them out loud. But, you know, the game evolves. And even there, a lot of people who are involved in sabermetrics and on the cutting edge of the kind of Moneyball era were also Jewish, you know. So our imprint is everywhere.
All right. So the projection, will we ever see another great Jewish quarterback? The guy at BYU was pretty good this last year.
Jay Grethpod was pretty good. You know, that was definitely one of the better stories I've gotten to cover just because it was so fun and so unexpected. You know, I mean, for listeners who don't know, this is a California native, grew up in a Reform Jewish community and went on to become the quarterback at BYU, Brigham Young University, the Mormon flagship college. And not only did he do that, but he was good. And he led them to a national ranking and a bowl game, and they almost made the college football playoffs. And then, of course, you know, he embraced his Jewish identity. He went by BYU. He wore his huge, you know, Star of David necklace on campus. He talked about it with teammates. He educated the community in Utah about Judaism, and then he went on to sign the first ever endorsement deal with Manischewitz.
Yeah.
So
it's such a great story.
He just seems like such a mensch. You know, will he make it to the NFL? Who knows? You know, our last great hope for a Jewish quarterback, Josh Rosen, did not pan out. You know,
who went to my alma mater, UCLA, he just didn't turn out very well.
Yeah, the promise was there. I think he was the 10th pick in the draft, and it just completely flamed out. So, you know, I don't want to get people's hopes up. It's hard to say.
One more question, and it's about a different sport altogether. Boxing has had, it used to have a lot of great Jewish fighters in the 20s and 30s because Jews were coming out of the slums, and that's how you... It's usually that socioeconomic that produces really great fighters. What do you think of Jake Paul?
That's a lightning rod question. It's almost, in a way, similar to the Sabonis situation, where you have someone who is already established in the world, already has their reputation, already has their controversy section on their Wikipedia page, who kind of discovers that he's Jewish. You know, in his case, obviously, it wasn't a conversion. It was more of a tapping into something that was always there, whether he knew it or not. You know, I remember digging into his Jewish background before his fight with Mike Tyson. And, you know, he had a YouTube video from like 15 years ago where his mom told him he had, quote, a little bit of Jew in you. So he always knew about this. But, you know, very recently he, you know, met up with, I think it was a Chabad rabbi and wrapped a tefillin and, you know, had his quote-unquote bar mitzvah. So I don't know. You know, I think it's a common question, is so-and-so good or bad for the Jews? It's a tough question. I think with someone like Jake Paul, honestly, the jury is still out. He's a tricky character. He's got a troubled past in a lot of ways. He's been accused of racism, sexual assault. He cast out on, you know, the seriousness of COVID. On the other hand, he's a young guy who only just last week or the week before embraced his Jewishness publicly for the first time. Can he use that for good? Can he impact Jews positively? Can he use his platform to make change? I'd say it's too soon to write that off, but I would say the cards are definitely stacked against him in that regard.
I want to thank Jacob Gervais for a great visit. I could talk sports with you for a long time. Tell me, where can people go to find out more about you and see more of your writing?
Yeah, well, thanks again for having me, Rabbi Cohen. This was so fun. I write the Jewish Sport Report newsletter for JTA. You can find us online. If you just Google Jewish Sport Report, you can sign up. It's a weekly email. It's so fun. Just all the Jewish sports news you need to know for the week in one email. And then for me, you can, you know, find me on Twitter, on Blue Sky, on whatever social media site people are using now. I'm always just at Jacob Gervais.
And it's Gurvis. Jacob, thank you so much. Hey, Baseball season's just right around the corner. We're in spring training. It's all good. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Too Jewish. Our guest will be Dr. Ron Onbar, author of The Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. Please join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading in Kiddush, live in person, and on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish is for the coming Festival of Purim. Sign up for our pre-Purim celebration and come. Purim for Grown-Ups 4 with Unscrewed Theater Improv at Beit Simcha, Saturday night, March 8th, 6:30 p.m. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675 for great fun and frolic. Anyway, our playout today comes from the Sephardic Jews of Sarajevo in the Balkans. It's the lovely tune Empezar a Contar for Purim, a Ladino song that tells really the whole story of the Book of Esther, more or less. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of justice and peace. Thank you.
Too Jewish is sponsored by Too Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.